This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, so what happened with the car?
Oh, man. My brother had just left to get food, a week and a half ago, and then came back and he's like, your car is not in the lot. I thought he was fucking with me, and then, it was gone. So, we reported to the police, and the police don't do shit about anything. They just wait for things to fall in their lap. So I actually ended up getting pretty impatient after a couple of days to leave my car. And I didn't want to rent the car for too long. And I just kind of got with somebody who I've been connected with in the political world who does, private investigation and stuff like that. And so he asked me, 1,000 questions, and he was able to actually track down the guy who did it.
Wow.
And there's actually a guy who works here, and he had been, breaking into cars, and we just got noticed today he'd been breaking into cars and stealing cars, several of them.
Works at the office?
And so, in the maintenance crew.
Oh, damn.
It was 17 years. And it made complete sense because, what happened is I have my – this is how I knew that they got my car immediately because I have my spare key a certain drawer that that was a good hiding place. But they had broken into my place and they got – they went through all my drawers, but then they got my spare key and that's how they, got my car.
Whoa. So they broke into your apartment first?
Yes.
And then took you, wow.
Because I was in Santa Barbara, on that weekend, and when I came back, somebody had broken into my home. I called the police about it. They didn't really, I didn't think they took anything, and it's so stressful, I didn't even think about my spare key that had been taken. And, they just took the spare key. I guess I don't know what they wanted to do with my car, but we were able to track them down.
What a genius plan.
It kind of was. If they weren't fucking with me, they obviously have been getting away with it.
Wow.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Cottaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather Nate Milton, joined as always by Marcus Vanderberg and the returning Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, a.k.a. Mr. I Left My Car in El Segundo. What is going on, fellas?
What up?
What's up, man?
Not much, but before we get into some sports talk here, the listeners want to know, Big Nasty, how are you and how is the car?
Car is doing fine. It is in an undisclosed location in case the person who stole it is listening.
Paramount.
And we were able
it's somewhere.
Yeah, we were able to track down who did it. I did reach out to the police who did nothing. I'm sad to report that the Paramount police station is a bunch of lazy, do nothing people who wait for everything to come to them. So I actually did reach to some not so nefarious means, but you could make an argument that they were a little nefarious. A retired private investigator, and he did the trick. Asked a bunch of questions, got down to the bottom of it, and I got my car back. So, not the household, except for the fact that the household is located in Paramount, which I will be leaving within the next month.
Well, hopefully you don't get a ticket within the next month for disparaging the fine people at the Paramount PD.
I don't think they would be competent enough to be able to complete that process.
Well, speaking of competency, last week we talked about coaching vacancies in the NBA, and this week those vacancies have been filled, or at least some of those vacancies. The hottest free agent coach on the market in the world today is a free agent no longer, as Steve Kerr puts his name on the dotted line and signs with the Golden State Warriors, taking over for Mark Jackson. Big news. I know people in New York may be disappointed about this, but for those that don't know, kind of break down the process of how this all occurred, Marcus.
Yeah, so we discussed last week about Steve Kerr being the top guy on the market, and the New York Knicks have basically, or Phil Jackson in particular, has made Steve Kerr this hot attraction because you wanted him to come in and run the triangle offense. And once Golden State fired Mark Jackson, Kerr is an option in Golden State. And I know Kerr was trying to get a fourth year from New York, which they were hesitant on until the very end. And at the end, I mean, Kerr is a West Coast guy. He lives in Arizona. He's a daughter who goes to, or is going to Berkeley. So it made sense, and he got more money from Golden State somehow. And yeah, it was a bit of a surprise. I didn't see this one coming at all. And it leaves New York in a tricky spot, in a sense, because if you're going to dedicate your offense to this Phil Jackson triangle system, then in theory you need a Phil Jackson guy to teach the system. And if Phil's not going to come out and coach, then you need to hire someone who's been, you know, either with the Bulls or Lakers organization over the past 15 years or so.
Eric Fisher.
Yeah,
well, I'll take it from here. Definitely. And Marcus talked about how it was a bit of a surprise, and it was. But based on what we have been hearing in the media of Steve Kerr being wooed by New York, now that he's going to Golden State, it's a surprise from that standpoint. But logically, it really shouldn't be a surprise, because on top of Steve Kerr being how Marcus explained, this is such a better situation. I mean, you got a first-time president of basketball operations in Phil Jackson. You've got an organization that's in disarray. Its biggest star may or may not be back. And then on the other side, you've got this budding franchise in Golden State where Mark Jackson did a very good job there. And he was pretty much a victim of his own success and big-headedness. And he's got two stars. You know, you got Steph Curry, you got Klay Thompson, you've got Andrew Bogut long-term. And it's just such a good situation to just transition into if you're a new head coach. All you have to do is get them over the top. And that's so much of a better task than to have to go and completely change a culture like you've done in New York, which hasn't won anything and they don't have any promise. So with Steve Kerr, this really shouldn't have been that much difficult of a situation.
I mean, he's got a better team. I don't know necessarily if he has a better chance of getting deep into the playoffs, because even a bad New York team still has a shot, a puncher's chance in the East, you know, which I don't see getting markedly better, you know, in the next year or so. And then you also have to think, you know, you mentioned the Phil Jackson component of the thing. Do you see a situation where if Phil can't find the guy that he wants to mold, or if no coach wants to be Phil's quote-unquote puppet or vessel for him to put his knowledge into, do you see a situation where Phil actually steps on the court?
I don't know. I just can't see him doing all 82 games at this stage of his life, so no.
Me neither. I think that would just be too much of a panic move too early, and it would set the wrong tone for his tenure in New York. I think the only situation we would see that is where Phil has pretty much, you know, is on his last leg, and maybe he hires the wrong guy, and it's like a situation where he just has to fire that guy and come down and do it himself. But even then, I don't see him coaching.
I mean, we've got a lot of coaches out there, you know, talking about Larry Drew, Mike Brown, Lionel Hollins, Mark Jackson, coaches that I would say are comparable to Steve Kerr. Maybe they have the quote-unquote stink of losing on them, but I think they're worth $5 million a year. Do you see any of those guys being looked at to fill that vacancy?
No.
Don't forget Scottie Brooks and Frank Vogel. They'll be there soon.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like all these coaches are on such borrowed time. And Mike Brown, he wasn't lighting the world on fire in Cleveland, but it's Cleveland. And, you know, I don't know what it is. In this day and age, maybe it's personality issues like we saw with Mark Jackson and the Golden State Warriors. But these organizations and these fans that think that they're entitled to a great team or entitled to advancing in the playoffs. You know, I think that there's something to be said for winning in the regular season. You know, every team is not going to be a championship contender.
No, I think Mike Brown got a raw deal, but that might be, you know,
Mike Brown's always getting raw deals. I'm surprised the brother ain't got salmonella yet.
No, he deserved to run from LA, please. Listen, he's still getting paid. I'm not gonna shed no tears for Mike Brown here. You know, he got fired, great, but yeah, he's getting money. But I think this might be buyer's regret. They brought him in, didn't work out for a year, and they went a new direction in the front office. And you know, the GM, I guess, wasn't a quote unquote Mike Brown guy, so decided to get rid of him. But yeah, I mean, it's the same issue the Lakers have. You fire these guys and you have all these contracts you have to pay out on top of the new coach. It just, financially, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and it's just so kind of an anomaly because you really don't see firings this rampant in the NBA. It's more of an NFL thing. So NFL is a win-now league. The NBA is a league that is kind of slower and more drawn out, and coaches usually do get their fair shake. But, you know, right now we are seeing just a cavalcade being moved around, and I really do think it's because of all the talent that is in the NBA, namely on the West. You've got not only a lot of good teams, but a lot of good young teams, and I think GMs are looking around saying, like, man, I mean, we're going to be behind these guys for this long. We really need to start getting better right now.
I agree to a certain extent. I still think that, I don't know. I think that there is a lot of impatience, and I don't know why. It just seems in the last 2 or 3 years that there's been this big shift. You know, I remember when coaches used to get maybe too much time to prove themselves, and now it's like, do it in a year or you're gone.
Well, I mean, besides Mike Brown, who are you talking about specifically? The Mark Jackson you're done?
I think Mark Jackson, but that was a personality conflict, as we mentioned last week. I think, you know, Larry Drew, I don't think Larry Drew was, I think you could have made the case Larry Drew deserved one more year on his contract.
In Atlanta?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you had a lot of pieces to play with there as a Hawks fan, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would make a bigger stink, but at least guys like Larry Drew are getting second chances, and that's where I'd be concerned. But NBA is really good about not having an issue that NFL has, where you see a black coach who gets fired and takes years, if they ever get a chance, to coach again. But the NBA seems to be one of the probably the only professional league where you see a guy like Larry Drew who gets fired from Atlanta, and he gets another head coaching job in the league. So, I mean, that part is good. So I understand where you're coming from, but at the same time, it's just, you know, when guys like, you know, Scott Brooks are probably going to be on the way out if they lose this Clippers series, I think it's at least fair. I would have a bigger issue if it was more of a slant towards white coaches or black coaches. But I think it's just the way the league is right now.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a racial element to it. I'm just saying I think, in general, the league is less patient than it used to be. Like, if you're talking about Scott Brooks, you're talking – like, there was actually people talking about Tom Thibodeau. I'm like, come on, man. You can't.
Yeah, and that's another personality conflict that they're hearing, but that might be a situation where he might get wooed by the Lakers, which is a long shot, but that could happen. But I completely agree with Nate in the sense that they do get less time these days, and it kind of doesn't make sense because there isn't as much parity with the NBA, so you would think that there should be more patience.
The talent is not as – yeah, you're right, there's less parity. I don't think the talent pool is as rich. I think the top echelon players are better than they've ever been, but I think in general – the NBA is not as talented as it was, you know, in the 90s or even in the 80s.
No, not even close.
But there is one man who is talented, and he has a title to match that talent. He is the new Detroit Pistons head coach, president of basketball operations, and all-around grand poobah, the one and only Stan Gundy. I like this move. What do you guys think about it?
Stan Van, back in coaching. He got paid, but he's going to have an uphill battle trying to salvage that Detroit team. The one thing I'm curious about is what Van Gundy will do with Greg Monroe and Josh Smith. Greg Monroe really doesn't fit into a Van Gundy offense, and unfortunately Josh Smith does, but Josh Smith is terrible. So I don't know if he's going to stick to a system or stick with the better player, because Monroe's way more talented than Josh Smith, but I think Monroe's contract is up after this season, I want to say. So I'm curious to see what he does with the personnel, since he is wearing both hats.
I think this is a perfect move for Stan Van Gundy. Stan Van Gundy, to me, is like the nerd in high school who went on to become a millionaire on either Wall Street or Silicon Valley, but he needs to get from underneath the shadow of the bullies that are there. And in Miami, he was given a raw deal by Pat Riley. Once that team got rolling, Pat Riley just kind of stepped out and said, I'll take it from here, kid. In Orlando, he kind of got a raw deal with Dwight Howard, where Dwight Howard at a press conference literally condescendingly put his arm around Stan Van Gundy, and just that thing blew up to where they didn't get along. Now he gets to go to Detroit, which is the city that fits his personality. He gets to get his hands a little dirty. He gets full team that has pretty much no superstars, and it's going to be his call. And I think this is the exact type of situation that an X's and O's guy like Stan Van Gundy, and a guy who really is obsessed with basketball, needs to be in. So I really think they're going to thrive.
I do miss the Dwight Howard Stan Van impression.
Yes.
That was always great.
It was good. It was very good.
Like, but you know, let's kind of separate the director of operations title from the head coaching title for a second. And just as a coach, you talk about a guy who is 371 and 208 in terms of wins and losses. He's been to conference finals. He's been to NBA finals. I think he's a guy that can get the best out of a team. He has had a couple raw deals in terms of getting Wally Pipped in Miami and also, you know, just dealing with the headache of Dwight Howard in Orlando. But I don't know. This Pistons team is interesting. You know, the Joe Dumars years weren't great.
I mean, they did win titles. It was great at one point.
The recent history of the Joe Dumars years. Joe Dumars was Nelly, like we mentioned last week. Two hot records, and now you're singing diss tracks to Floyd Mayweather. But this Pistons team in an Eastern Conference, which I mentioned earlier, is still down. It's if the Wizards, you know, if not for some knuckleheaded decisions, the Wizards could be advancing, or, you know, a team like Atlanta, who had a losing record, almost upsets the number one seed. Anything's possible. And I think the Pistons, I'm not enamored with the roster, but I do think there's some quality pieces.
Well, anything's possible until you face Miami, and then nothing is possible.
Miami, assuming that team stays together for the next two or three seasons, I mean, they're the big bully on the block. But, you know, there's, I think, second and third place.
That's a big assumption to assume they're going to stay together for a couple of seasons. Even if Miami is only getting more human as the days go on, there's no guarantee Chris Bosh is going to be there. Dwayne Wade, at this point, is damaged goods. So it's LeBron James in Cleveland all over again, and it's going to get closer and closer to that as the years go on. And it's like we just brought up with the Eastern Conference, his road to glory is that much shorter because it's so weak. You know, the Wizards could have been in the championship game, as we just brought up, and now he's got this Detroit Pistons team in a wide open Eastern Conference, which, again, I do not think it is a handicap that he has pretty much nobody to work with that personnel, with that roster. He can do all the molding and do all that stuff himself, and it's going to make up with it with great coaching. And so I think that this Detroit Pistons team is presented with a very good situation to be very competitive within the next 2 years.
What's going to hurt them, actually, I should say, is if they lose their lottery pick this year and Charlotte can claim their pick if it's ninth or later. So if they lose that pick, I mean, that's already a big blow for Van Gundy. But they do have some cap space this offseason to sign some players. And, I mean, they do have they have some talent. It's just a matter of...
They got Alfred's boy, Brandon Jennings.
Well, yes, I said talent. it's just a matter of Van Gundy trying to mold the pieces that he does have. But Andre Drummond he 5 years from now, he could easily be the best center in the league, hands down.
Absolutely.
To think he's only 21, if that. No, he's still 20. Excuse me, he's 20. He's going to be very much like the Dwight Howard, and if they can find some stretch fours and some shooters to build around Drummond, then, you know, we saw what Orlando did with Van Gundy and Howard, and they put a bunch of shooters around him, and they went all the way to the NBA Finals, so you never know.
And the thing is that Stan Van Gundy is this is the time where he's got everything he wants. You know, he's what's the old Bill Parcells line? If you want me to cook the meal, let me buy the groceries. You know, he's got a say in player personnel. He's going to be coaching these guys and trying to get the best out of them, molding his team in his own vision. So if this thing doesn't work out, he's got nobody to blame but the man in the mirror.
Or Joe Dumars for bringing in Josh Smith, $13.5 million. Or blame him, yeah.
He'll blame somebody.
Hey, sometimes you got to look in the mirror and think about your life and your decisions. And a young man that may be doing that soon is one Michael Sam of the St. Louis Rams. And we don't know if he's going to make the Rams roster, but he has apparently signed on with a winning team, Brother Marcus.
Is she a winning team, though? Who's really talking about Oprah?
Oh, come on.
Oprah's accountant? Oprah alone.
No.
Oprah's accountant is talking about Oprah. I haven't watched 1 second of the Oprah Winfrey Network. I haven't bought one issue of the Oprah Winfrey magazine, but she's still eating.
She's doing fine without you.
Yeah. I'll save my comments to Oprah. Go ahead.
And she's supporting Stedman and Gale and Dr. Oz and Dr. Phil and
soon the LA Clippers.
No, oh, God, no, please.
Come on, Oprah, come down.
No, don't. Please, no.
Come stay with me in Paramount.
Yeah, so Michael Sam is going to have a documentary series on the OWN Network. And this has not rubbed his future teammates the right way. As STOT ESPN's Josina Anderson from Anonymous Player. It's interesting case that he gets to work with Oprah and have his own show. But I think it does raise eyebrows and it may be somewhat of a distraction. But this is our first time dealing with something like this, so we'll have to wait and see how it plays out and how people react. And just to follow up, she asked if teammates are truly embracing Sam or trying to be politically correct. The player said, clearly, I'm not sure how everyone feels, but from what I can tell so far, I think it's a little bit of both, honestly. So it's been a week, less than a week, and already he's, you know, causing some ripples in the locker room.
Yes, he has failed the first test that you required to that he's going to be like a citizen and he's going to work hard and do all this stuff that you say, oh, I just want to be a football player. This is the first test that he's been presented with and he failed. Okay, because I think he would have done favors for himself in that locker room if they found out, wow, he turned down Oprah to just play football. Man, maybe he was serious about just wanting to be a football player. Now we're seeing Michael Sam in a reality show and wanting to be a celebrity from what it seems. And recently, 60% of NFL fans, they wanted Michael Sam on their team, or they would accept Michael Sam, a gay football player, on their team. That's not to say that 40% of these fans were homophobic, but I would fall under that 40% of fans who don't want Michael Sam on my team after learning about this, because I don't think that having cameras follow you around is going to do any wonders for the youngest team in the NFL, which I believe will be the St. Louis Rams. And we have just seen two of the biggest stories in America blow up because they were born about from surveillance footage that was not ever to see the light of day, but somehow got leaked. And all it takes is some NFL player to casually say the word faggot or something like that to happen to where you're out of a job and you become front page news on TMZ. And it's not that, you know, blown out of proportion. Everything is news these days. And this whole TMZ gotcha society is just a subculture of reality television, which everybody's new guilty pleasure is seeing who is next to out themselves and to ruin their career.
Now, I'm kind of torn on this. I don't have a problem. Like, you talk about that poll, I would be in the 60% because, you know, I'm going to be consistent. And I was always a big supporter of Tim Tebow. And he came with the big circus tent and the hullabaloo around him. And Michael Sam, whether you like it or not, he's going to come with, quote unquote, distractions. And to me, it's like, you're an NFL organization. You're a head coach. You supposedly wield so much power amongst these men. You should be able to shut that distraction down. But my problem with Michael Sam in this instance is that he did not let the Rams know up front. He wasn't honest with them. Like, hey, I'm talking with Oprah, and we might be doing this show. They didn't find out until we found out. And I think that's a problem.
You mentioned Tebow. I think Tebow, while polarizing, he didn't ask for this attention. He didn't bring the cameras. The cameras came to him, and that's on media. I think Sam is inviting the cameras, and even if you look at the draft announcement from last Saturday, while I understand the importance of what happened last Saturday, at some point during the draft, I think you have to take a step back and realize, okay, if I do get drafted, what is this really going to say that I'm seven picks from the end of the draft and I'm still have the cameras here? I don't know. Jason Whitlock had a whole thing. He was at first supporting Michael Sam and he changed his opinion on Sam and he wrote, it all feels orchestrated now. The draft day kiss, the cake covered face, the tears, the celebration that conveniently captured just Sam, his boyfriend, and his two agents, and even the stand with Sam t-shirt selling on michaelsam.com. Who knew a reality TV show was being filmed? Who knew Sam's agents and publicists had cut deals to be producers on a reality TV show? This is all scripted and amateur and devious, too.
I don't see how that's a surprise. I mean, obviously cameras were there with Michael Sam, so they had an idea of what they wanted to shoot. And, you know, maybe Michael Sam was getting ready to do something. He must have had a plan of what he was going to do. He was going to kiss when he found this out. So, I mean, obviously there was a plan and it was orchestrated. I don't see how there's any outrage in that.
Now, my question to you, Big Nasty, because you weren't here when we talked about this last week, is, you know, I don't have a problem with the kiss and the embrace and all that. You know, even though that's not what I'm looking for on my TV, I don't really like it when, you know, it's heterosexual couples kissing. I'm like, you know, keep the PDA private. But I understand it was a happy moment. Good for you. To me, it went to another level when you got the cake and it's like the whole wedding deal almost. And it's like, that to me speaks as, again, like, I think the key word that Marcus said right there, choreographed. It's something that's almost, this is not a spontaneous, joyous moment. This is something that you've been planning.
Yeah, it's, there's two discussions to be had with the whole Sam thing. One is the stuff with the reality series. And then there's another segment of fans who are, you know, basically screaming, you know, what's the big deal, and get over it and stop talking about the guy. And I believe all that is just hidden homophobia when it comes to those type of, you know, outspoken comments. So I said last week, I don't see him making a team. I stand by that comment this week. And if he really wants a shot at sticking on a roster after training camp, then he needs to really change his approach on how he's doing things.
Yeah, maybe this is Michael Sam admitting that he doesn't think he's going to last very long in the NFL, so he might as well get what he can get out of it.
Cash out, man.
Bringing on the cameras and whatnot. But
having a show with Oprah is a better fallback than most of those guys coming out of the draft have.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. But in order for people to one day feel that it's not a big deal for a gay player to play in the NFL, and I know this is the first time, so we can make an exception here, but he needs to be the first person to treat this like it's not a big deal. And based on how he has acted or how he has been, we don't have to assume that it's all contrived, based on how he has been and handled himself in front of a camera and these reports we're hearing, he is treating it like it's a very big deal and like people should take note of the fact that here comes a gay NFL player.
Do you know how much we would slam Tebow if he was selling religious t-shirts after he got drafted?
Yeah.
On his own website, on timtebow.com. So, I mean, that part just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, and I understand Michael Sam has dueling motivations. I'm sure he wants to be a good football player, but there's also a cultural weight on his shoulders. But the easiest way to take that weight off his shoulders is to be a good football player, because then you can take the first openly gay football player, and you're like, no, he's a good football player. And I think unless he makes the team and unless he makes a contribution to that team, then it's not going to go away. The circus is still going to be in town, and that 10 is going to be right out back outside the stadium.
Just one last thing about this. Just compare him to Jason Collins and what happened with him. And different circumstances, exactly, for sure, with a 10-day contract and everything. But outside of the initial first game in L.A. and the first game back in Brooklyn, when's the last time someone's mentioned Jason Collins?
And what I also like about Jason Collins is they just kept asking him after he played that first game all kinds of questions about being gay, and he only wanted to talk about basketball. Yeah. He always transitioned back to basketball.
And I mean, that's the difference between, you know, 21 compared to 37 or however old Jason Collins is. So that's probably just maturity and, you know, probably being more comfortable in his shoes in terms of being a out gay man.
And not to overreact, but let's face it. Let's face that this Michael Sam situation could be an outright nightmare for the gay community. Like, there's no guarantee this man is going to be an ambassador. We could find things in this reality show that make him, you know, disappear. He could be a diva. He could be a jerk. And just based on how he's acting right now, I would be very nervous if I was in the gay community. This is a guy who's going to represent. He's the first guy. So if he screws this up, like, they're going to have a stigma even more so than they do right now.
Yeah, he does. He bears the weight, you know. Fairly or unfairly, you know, he bears the weight of an entire group of people on his back. And that's what I said, you know, he's got to be good. He just can't be some middling average player. He's got to be good. He's got to, you know, he doesn't have to be a superstar, but he's got to make an impact. And, you know, the way this is going and all these other distractions that are popping up, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I wish him the best of luck. But, I mean, that's a lot of pressure to put on one kid to sort of be the face of gay athletes. I mean, yeah, I wish him luck.
Me too.
Yeah, me three. You know, best of luck. But if he does get cut, though, you know, at least he's got Oprah there, and she'll be like, look under your chair, Michael. You get a contract. Then you get a contract. Tebow, you get a contract. Maybe not that far. Oprah's not God. She can't make that miracle happen. Sorry, Tebow. I feel bad now just taking a shot at Tim Tebow after.
Tebow's fine. He's working. He'll be working on it.
If he's listening, he'll be like, you were my biggest supporter. A2 Godfather. It's all right, though. It's he may not be an all-star player, but he's an all-star guy. And speaking of all-stars, NBC Universal has re-upped with one of their all-stars, and we'll talk about it up next, the Ringside Wrap. So stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's not just any day. It's Mr. Throwback Thursday.
Hey, everybody. You remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do, too. My name's Jamie Robinson, and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host, Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT, or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Marcus Nasty Nick and... Never feel really excited about something until you're confronted with it. The best example I can give is like when you're taking tests. Like when I was in high school, I'd study really hard for a test. And then feel really good about it going in. But then they put the test in front of you. You look at the questions and they're just not as easy as the study guide was. And they flip it around on you and they change the problems around. You're thinking like, I really didn't study this on the study guide. It's not what it looked like. And they really want to test to see if you know the concepts, and you didn't know them as good as you did, so you bombed the test. WWE is in a similar situation. For the past month, all I've been hearing is, oh, their future is so bright. Look at Paige debuted, and Wade Barrett's on his way, and Cesaro's future is so bright. Then Daniel Bryan actually won the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, and they realized, we really don't have very many strong heels, do we? Everybody's too busy trying to be cool. So they had to trot out 40-year-old Kane to feud with Daniel Bryan. And then now Daniel Bryan, the big news of the week, has been injured. Accumulation of wear and an aggressive ring style. He went under surgery today, which is Thursday. Well, there's no timetable for his return, but it looks like he's going to be out for 2 to 3 months in a best-case scenario.
And now WWE's realizing they don't have very many babyface talents to ascend to his position. So that said, Marcus, your thoughts on the Daniel Bryan injury, and if you have any possible solutions for who takes his place while he's gone.
First off, what a shitty couple. Now, it's been almost a month now for Daniel Bryan between his father passing away and getting booked with Kane and now getting hurt. So just a huge blow that they can turn into a positive when he does return and have another chase all over again, which is good. Because that's when he was his hottest. When he won the title, he sort of cooled off. And that might be in part because of his inconsistent booking or the fact that he was paired with Kane. So the jury's out. But yeah, in terms of a replacement, in terms of who I would want to see, it would be Punk, of course. That's not going to happen. So in terms of someone who's actually showing up to work, I wouldn't mind seeing Ziggler get another shot. He had a similar situation to Bryan where he won the title, got hurt, lost the title, and sort of fell back down the card. So I would love to see him get another run. But we saw what happened with the tournament last month for the Intercontinental title and how well that did. I think having a tournament for the World Heavyweight title would be just as exciting, if not more.
Yeah, that could be an interesting turn of events. I do think, much like you said, Marcus, it's been a crazy last couple of months for Daniel Bryan, from the highest of the highs, winning the WWE title at WrestleMania, to the lowest of the lows, losing his father, to more highs, marrying Brie Bella, to more lows, acting in an angle with Brie Bella, if you can call it that. But, yeah, this is just bad news from a guy that, you know, by all accounts, is just a really good guy. And, you know, I think the WWE is in a little bit of trouble because the mid-card, as we've talked about for months, is just such a logjam of guys that are either not ready, guys that are ready and have been poorly booked, or guys that used to be something and now they're kind of nothing. And so I don't know. I don't know where you go with this. I think that maybe in a situation like this, the safest thing to do is go with the safest thing to do, and that is maybe putting the belt back on John Cena for a bit.
And, I mean, the fact that we are talking about that and that is the most viable situation really exposes this roster. It's not ready yet. We've heard a lot about Roman Reigns being a potential top star, but did you see his promo on Monday? That guy's not ready. And it just kind of made me realize that Roman Reigns has been expertly hidden. His flaws have been hidden in the Shield to where he doesn't talk that much, he doesn't wrestle that much, and he's just kind of has this mysterious charisma about him. And I really do think it would be a mistake if they broke that emergency glass and just bolted Roman Reigns. There are guys on the roster who I think would thrive in a situation where if they were just thrown out there and they off they could swim, that they would benefit. But Roman Reigns is not that guy, because now you're talking about long promos, long matches, and I think at this point of his career, while he does show promise, he will be exposed in a second.
Yeah, he's not ready. You also have Cesaro out there who could be ready to step in. But, I mean, we saw with what they did with Wade Barrett. You know, Barrett was off TV for visa issues, had a real gimmick that wasn't really getting over the fans at first, and just from that tournament alone, they've made Barrett into a legit mid-carder. So I think a tournament situation can benefit that lucky guy and really elevate them to at least a temporary status until Bryan comes back.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, just kind of thinking maybe about the elephant in the room, do you think that a situation like this maybe makes the higher-ups at the WWE more conciliatory to a gentleman out in Chicago?
I don't care about it.
I mean, because you're talking, like Alfred said, maybe 2 to 3 months in a best-case scenario. If it turns out not to be the best case, God forbid, do you think that they may go into a bit of a panic mode?
I could see them panicking. I think, well, we'll get to the real reason they should be panicking after this segment or after the story, but I think if the ratings, I mean, they hit the lowest mark of the year this past Monday in terms of ratings. I think if they continue to have another week or two like that, I could see them trying to at least make a call and see if CM Punk would at least work out the rest of his contract, which is supposed to expire sometime in July, And, you know, if he wants to come back, he can come back. If not, then that should at least buy him some time until Brian comes back. But, I mean, they are doing Chicago. It'd be an easy enough way to at least have a reason to watch that pay-per-view. Because at the moment, why would you, besides it being on the network, I mean, what's really drawing you to watch Payback? It's all rematches at this point, and you don't have a title match.
Yeah, and the thing is, I knew with Payback, I thought, oh, we're going to get the CM Punk discussion again, and because it's going to be in Chicago, and we really didn't, which was kind of refreshing. There really wasn't any type of, well, will CM Punk, will he will not show up? Now that Daniel Bryan is hurt, it's all started right back up again, and I just do think it's going to be all for naught. If the guy left in the dead of WrestleMania season, and he clearly doesn't care about money, and we're talking about whether or not WWE, if they panic, then maybe they call it, like, they're definitely in panic. Make no mistake about it, their WWE World Heavyweight Champion is out for an undisclosed amount of time. They are definitely panicking. That's not going to change the bearings of what CM Punk does. CM Punk is going to do what he wants to do, and what he wants to do now and indefinitely, especially with the story coming out of him hating being famous or whatnot, he's staying home, he's staying on his couch. So WWE is going to have to fix this problem internally in my eyes.
By the way, the next pay-per-view is Money in the Bank, so I don't know if they could somehow maybe do a tournament to decide the participants and just have the title in the briefcase or something along those lines. But it'd be weird to have this, you know, tournament on Raw, you're trying to champion, and then 2 weeks later, the briefcase is up there. So,
yeah, I think, I mean, if that's the case, then maybe you just kind of tread water for this next month and then settle the title issue at Money in the Bank.
Yeah, I mean, that would be intriguing to have, you know, eight guys or six guys in a ladder match to decide the world heavyweight champion.
And the thing is, you've got guys in there that you know would not realistically have a chance of winning, but in this situation, you could put a guy like Dolph in or a guy like Kofi in and have those amazing spots and still have some sort of suspension of disbelief that if something goes the right way, Kofi Kingston could actually win the title. He won't, but you can actually think that for a split second.
You can, but I don't think WWE needs to go babyface with their solution, because then it'll just seem like a cheap ripoff of Daniel Bryan. It'll be too easy to compare. They need, and people are going to resent them for being the guy who took over for Daniel Bryan, and they're going to just incorrectly assume that they killed Daniel Bryan's dream.
And that
you got to go heel here.
Yeah, that kills
it. It absolutely does. And I think you got to go heel here.
Well,
what they can do,
unless they do Cena, and I think that doesn't matter because they have a, you know, they can go back to SummerSlam and say, hey, a year ago, you know, you defeated me, so let's decide, you know, who's really on top. But besides him, there's no one else they can go with.
Yeah, and Cena can still play the babyface by saying, since you never lost the title, you know, you lost it through injury, I'm going to give you a shot when you get better.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's all good and well, but if you want to get heat out of this angle, you put it on a heel, and I think Sheamus would be perfect. There's already rumors of him joining Evolution. WWE could do the face of the WWE situation all over again, because now, as heels, they can say, we told you so, we told you your hero's going to get hurt, this is what we've been trying to warn you from, so now we're going to give you somebody who we believe in, and we're going to get this company back on track, and that guy is Sheamus. And Sheamus is already starting to get heat from beating Dean Ambrose. He's already got a feud going with the internet. I think it just lines up perfectly for Sheamus to go on a heel run, and then you get that Sheamus-Daniel Bryan program that I know that they were planning for WrestleMania.
Or Triple H could just name himself champion.
I was going to say, really, that's the other. Plan B is just give it to Triple H.
Yeah, well,
it wouldn't surprise me at all because, you know, WWE has a lot of growing to do. There's a lot of stars who aren't where they should be and whose growth spurts have not hit where they think they should get. But speaking of growing that wasn't as big as WWE thought it was going to be, WWE's TV rights deal was recently announced. And it's not double. It's not triple. It's nowhere near the grandiose figures WWE had expected. So now the company has taken a bit of a hit. Their stock has dropped, I believe, below 20%. And it is not in very good shape at the time, especially when you configure the fact that their WWE Network subscription number came in below 1 million, which was a landmark figure thrown out by WWE. So, you know, let's start with Nate here. As a TNA fan and a WWE hater, how happy are you?
Hey, well, first of all, I'm not a WWE hater. I am someone who has a free thinker. I'm a counterculturist. I'm a, what's that word? I don't even know what the word is, but I'm trying to. A renegade, a free spirit, if you will. But, you know, I don't revel in this. I do take solace in the fact that they're staying with NBC because that's better for TNA in the long run, if there is a long run for TNA. But to this kind of speaks to that kind of old school McMahon hubris that we don't really see a lot these days because, you know, Triple H, for all intents and purposes, is kind of usurping that role or being, you know, gradually given that role of being the public face of the company. But, you know, what was it? I guess it was the conference call or a couple weeks ago where Vince was, you know, getting out these projections and this is what we're going to command and this is what we're going to be able to get. And not in this climate, Vince. Not in this climate and not for this product. I mean, the WWE is by far the worldwide leader in sports entertainment, but this isn't 1996. You know, the mainstream desire for wrestling is not there. You know, even though the WWE is getting great ratings on USA, you know, it makes USA a top 25 cable network, Vince didn't have the leverage in this situation. You know, NBC Universal, USA, the leverage, and, you know, they were able to say, oh, we're not going to give you double, we're not going to give you triple. You're going to take what we give you, and you're going to like it.
This isn't good. And you mentioned what the stock did. So the stock is down 23% after hours.
Woo.
That means they're down 50% since WrestleMania. So that's a lot of money that the man's lost this past month because all of them have a number of shares, reportedly, in the company. So, yeah, they ended up getting $200 million, reportedly, for their TV deal with NBC Universal. There's no details on whether they're moving SmackDown to Tuesday and making that live, or actually how long the deal is itself. But yeah, the investors are upset, and they should be, because, I mean, if you listen to the WWE, this isn't the first time we've heard that they've talked about trying to double and triple their deal. This has been discussed before, and if you're an investor, if you haven't sold by now, then it's you might as well hang on and hope it bounces back somehow, because you've lost a lot of money in the last 45 days or so.
I was going to say, combine this with the kind of disappointment of the network, you know, it's kind of a 1-2 punch for the investors.
And, I mean, a lot of that is it's on them. I'm not sure if they would have been more conservative about not only the numbers of the network, but how much they could actually get from NBC Universal. I think the stock wouldn't have crashed as much. But when you're out there toting these big numbers and you don't deliver it, then what else can you expect the shareholders to do except for sell?
Yeah, this hurts a lot, and it's going to hurt long-term. Their stock is going to stay down. This is one of those situations. Investors look at everything, every little thing they look at in order to analyze a company. Hell, there are investors who theorize that the Undertaker losing it somehow had to do with the stock falling. So they, you know, they know this business, and even though some of them are suckers, there are investors who know everything. And the fact that WWE made these two bold claims in such a short period of time, and this is basically what their business was going to be predicated on, nobody's going to believe another word that comes out of their mouth when it comes to investing meetings, and they're always going to adjust down. And this company will be bought at a discount for years to come. And I'm not just being, you know, pessimistic. That's just how the game works. WWE was in a very rare position to where with these deals coming up, subscriptions of your network, with their TV rights, they could have really made some windfall if they would have kept their numbers basically where they should have been and been realistic and maybe even lived up to what they thought they were going to do. I don't blame them for thinking they could do a million subscriptions to the WWE network, but they did not. So now there's really nothing else for WWE to do to recover and be at where they were when their stock was at all-time highs. Yeah. Attitude era highs.
They'll get a little bit of a bump, I guess, when the network goes international, but not enough to make up for the losses. And the other thing is, you know, getting back to the NBC Universal deal, like I'm not saying this because I'm not always a WWE fan, but I think it's good for the industry in a sense, in a weird roundabout way, because I think that if the WWE left USA, I don't think USA or NBC Universal would be open to another wrestling company. And so with them staying put, I think that allows, you know, TNA, if Spike decides to re-up, it allows TNA to stay at a network. It allows, you know, AAA and El Rey to do their thing. It allows Jeff Jarrett to go and find a broadcast partner. And regardless of what you want to say about the content of these shows, the more wrestling that is on TV, the better it is for the industry.
Well, that might be true. I don't know if, I mean, I would think that if they're getting more money from US NBC Universal, that'd be a better sign for these other companies. If the WB, if the biggest bully on the block can only get a minor raise with their contract coming up, I'm not sure what that means for the second tier and third tier promotions in terms of these major cable networks. I mean, El Rey, that's the AAA promotion. It's live. I don't get the channel. I don't know anyone who gets this channel. I think we'll see, you know, Jeff Jarrett end up on a network like that, but what good does that do if no one can actually see it?
We know Alfred doesn't watch El Rey with his feelings about Mexicans.
we're at a bit of odds right now, but I'll be back to LA soon.
No. I mean that's at
the man's got to eat Mexican food eventually.
Yeah, you need to fix that, though. But I mean, I see your point, Marcus. But I think, you know, I don't know where the trade off is, or you know, but I think that having, because like I said, I think if the WWE did not stay on USA, and let's say they went to Spike, that would be good for the WWE, but it would hurt TNA. It would hurt. I don't think USA would be looking to bring another competing organization in. And so, you know, ROH isn't benefiting. TNA isn't benefiting. You know, I think on the one hand, you're right, that if they could have commanded this huge salary, financially that would have been a sign that the industry is getting stronger. But I think that just the fact that you've got TNA with a lifeline. You've got these other companies that, you know, maybe can get their act together. And, you know, if TNA falters on site, maybe they can move into that spot. I think just having that those outlets out there is a good thing for the industry.
Well, I mean, let's not, you know, say that TNA returning to Spike is a lot. Because if the WWE shopped around and couldn't find anything and had to settle, then, yeah, TNA does great ratings for Spike. But, you know, at some point, Spike needs to assess what the hell they're doing on that network outside of wrestling, because I think they had a vision when they first started what they wanted to be, but you know, currently it's either Cops or TNA that's the two top rated programs on that network, and I don't know how long that you can live off those two things and keep your network going.
Yeah, I think seeing this as a blow to the wrestling business for WWE's deal to come in so low. And I really do think heads will roll in WWE corporate land. Far be it to be to call for somebody's job, but Michelle Wilson, George Berrios, there was a lot of talk that if they did not double or triple their rights fees, their jobs would be in danger. So we might hear that headline coming down soon. But from underwhelming deals to a superstar turning heel, Nate, I believe you have an update from TNA land. So why don't you go ahead and why don't you wax poetic about your company?
First of all, that was a good rhyme, Nipsey Cunnell. I appreciate it. But, yeah, big heel turn. I guess last week, Marcus and I talked about it in our weekly TNA 2 minutes, MVP turning heel on Eric Young. And this week we saw a continuation of that as he got some much-needed black up in the form of Kenny King and Bobby Lashley. And I got to say, I like it. MVP as a heel is awesome already. I mean, he's by far the one of the best performers in TNA, if not the best. And, you know, just his opening promo tonight where, you know, he tried to make sense of the convolutedness with the Dixie Carter storyline, saying that he intended to do the best for TNA, but every champ, every athlete knows that there's always that hunger to get back in the arena, and the title is the driving force behind it all. And he alluded to Donald Sterling. And again, TNA, not always on the cutting edge of things, but MVP keeping it current. And he was talking about, Donald Sterling.
Keeping it current 2 weeks ago, by the way. Let's not pretend this is live, but go ahead.
Hey, well, when he did the promo, it was actually really current. It was like probably the week of when they actually recorded it. But he said that, you know, he could be the director of wrestling operations all he wants, but he can't really influence the product. Donald Sterling was the owner of the Clippers, and they kicked him to the curb. But those players still have an opportunity to go after the gold, and that's what he wants. And it's like, This dude is really good. You forget how good MVP is because you really, if you don't watch TNA, you haven't seen him in a long time. But MVP is a guy that was underutilized by the WWE. And, you know, I don't know where this angle is going to go. They could screw it up. There's a better than average chance they will screw it up with that creative team. But for now, I think it's interesting. And it is the best booked use of African-Americans in either of the two major two companies right now. So TNA's got that going for it.
Okay, and the one question I have coming up on less than 1 minute and TNA's 2 minutes is, do you think that MVP could be a viable champion just for 3-4 months?
You think absolutely. That would, I think that would be, yeah, that would, they're already building up challengers for him. You got Eric Young, you got Bobby Roode, Austin Aries was on the show tonight, and they got into some beef, which killed my theory about Austin Aries being the token white guy, which I still think they need. Maybe it'll be EC3 now, which would be all right. I'd be cool with that. But, yeah, I think they've got some baby faces that MVP can they can set up and slay, and then ultimately whoever you want your guy to be, whether that is Bobby Roode or you know, whether it is EY, which I don't think it will be, you know, MVP makes a good foil. So I think it's MVP as champ was probably the best out of a less than stellar bunch of options. Not that EY has done a bad job, but, you know, MVP makes a better champ in my opinion.
And just to keep up with our weekly departure list from TNA. Two more guys drawn.
Yes.
Chris Sabin and Hernandez. We can cross them off the list of active talent.
So. Yeah, Sabin, Hernandez, and I think Kazarian as well.
Yes, Kazarian as well. I don't know if we touched on that last week or not, but yeah, so that's three.
So yeah,
you guys are railing off all these names in TNA who, you know, oh, they could challenge MVP, and you're clearly forgetting the biggest name there is and somebody who's an expert in fighting black men, oh. And that's Solange.
All right.
Segment 4 is coming up next.
Well played. Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. Foot soles and beer. Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom. Explosion. Overpowering. Over the competition. I'm towering. Wreck his shop. When I drop these lyrics that'll make you call the cops. Don't you dare. What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course. PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. PlaceToBeNation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack, the Cowboys Call, we have the best in comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad Show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. I want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also, check out PiledriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out placetobenation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
And welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, we got to end things off the way we do each and every show. And that is with the often imitated but never ever duplicated segment 4. Your weekly look into the world of sports and pop culture and the ratchetness therein. And boy, we have a lot of ratchetness to get to this week. Some silly, some crazy, some borderline cracky tales. But before we get into any of that, let's hit on some serious segment four stuff and some news with Aaron Hernandez from earlier today, Brother Marcus.
Yeah, Aaron Hernandez already in jail for a allegedly killing a dude. Is now indicted on two more murder charges. So now he's facing three different murders under his rap and under his belt. And this is from a 2012 double homicide that he was indicted on. So that means he played the entire 2012 season as allegedly a double murderer. And this was after he signed his new deal with the Patriots for $40 million. So, not to make light of the situation, but it's a little impressive to look back and to see how talented he was on the field and what kind of, or maybe he wasn't feeling any guilt, but just to know what was going on. If he actually did this double murder and this was on his chest and on his mind, I don't even know how he played football every week.
Yeah, I mean, either he's a cold, calculating killer, or he just, you know, has some of the most amazing compartmentalization skills ever, you know, in terms of when I'm on the field, it's all about football and I shut everything else out, including the fact that I killed two people.
Yeah, but we're putting ourselves in the way we think as normal day-to-day people in the shoes and the mind of Aaron Hernandez. Most killers have sociopathic tendencies. He's not able to compartmentalize. That is, you know, we couldn't muster up the, you know, devious tendencies to just kill somebody, but he obviously, allegedly, could go across that line, kill somebody, and then, of course, when he has that ability, he could just turn around and play football and live his day-to-day life. So that type of sociopathic notion, that's perfectly normal for a killer, as ironic as that sounds.
That's actually a very good point, Alfred. I'm stunned at your psychiatric know-how there, sir.
I had to get in the mind of criminals when my car was stolen, so I took a lot of... I watched Dr. Phil, and, you know, he filled me in.
Oh, well, let's see if you can do us one better then. And you've been inside the mind of criminals. You've been inside the minds of internet trolls. Can you get inside the mind of a mad black woman?
Would I want to be there?
Oh, yes. Of course, if you don't know by now, we are talking about Solange Gate. Is that what we're calling it now?
Sure. I'm just tired of the story, but sure, we can talk about that.
AKA hate in an elevator. I guess today they came out with a quote-unquote family statement, but let's talk about it, Marcus. Since you don't want to talk about it anymore, I'll let you set it up.
Yeah, so you've seen it by now. Surveillance video was leaked from the Standard Hotel in New York City after the Met Gala on May 5th, where it was Jay-Z, Beyonce, Solange, and some bodyguards. And as soon as Solange got in the elevator with Jay-Z, she started hitting and kicking Jay-Z. And Beyonce just stood there like, what? Like, just didn't react, didn't flinch, didn't try to help Jay-Z or even better, it didn't try to help Solange. She just stood there, which means, A, she's really keen that everything's being recorded in the world and she's on camera. Mm-hmm. Or B, this isn't the first time this has happened between the two of them. And this is just the two of them sort of, this is how they are. And it's nothing new. It's family. And we all have, you know, crazy relatives and we all have family issues. And unfortunately, their family issues are now just a little more public.
Yeah, that was my first thought when I saw it and looking at Beyonce's reaction. I was like, you know what? This probably isn't the first time this has happened. Like, Jay-Z and Solange probably go at it like Fred and Aunt Esther or Martin and Pam. And they just are on each other's nerves all the time. And I don't know. I don't know if Jay said something or, you know, he you know, because you can tell Jay-Z's kind of a smart ass.
Yeah.
You can think he might have said something to Solange and she got mad and was like, I'm sorry. What you want me to do? You're crazy for this one, Solange.
Yeah, well, and what also could happen is, you ever see those Key and Peele sketches, is that Obama had the id, and, you know, you got the calm Obama, and then you've got, like, the ratchet version, who just says and does everything Obama wants to do. That could have been playing out with Beyonce, in that maybe her and Jay-Z were fighting, and Solange was acting as her id. Like, that's what Beyonce wanted to do, but you couldn't. It could also be the fact that, like, there are so many theories behind Beyonce not doing anything. Some people have suggested that maybe, you know, Jay-Z had cheated on her and Solange was getting revenge for her sister, which, you know, that could, you never know. But what I think the most likely scenario is, like what Marcus brushed upon, is that Beyonce is very wary of her image, and she knows that she lives in a world where you're always being filmed. We were reminded as such with Donald Sterling. And so she knows that when it comes to her image, everything is choreographed. That's why she could never be sexy to me. I don't care if she came out with an album talking about how she had sex in the back of a car with her man, the partition, but it's just not sexy to me, because there's nothing raw about Beyonce. Everything about her seems contrived and pre-planned to me, and I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but I am saying that that can tie into the fact that she was standing around doing nothing when her sister and her husband were in this violent brawl.
You're saying Beyonce will never be sexy to you?
Never, not to me. Rihanna, give me Rihanna over Beyonce. She's more raw. She's flawed. She dates bad boys, you know?
She makes, little girls cry on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
That she does. See, it's flawed. It's sexy.
Yeah, that's a second four story that we're not going to have time for. But yeah, just look up Rihanna and Twitter prom dress. That's terrible.
That poor girl. Okay.
I guess they came out today and put out a statement that, much like all families, we have our issues, and, you know, we love each other, even though, what was it, a couple of days ago, Solange took down every picture of Beyonce and Jay-Z from her Instagram and all this other foolishness. But
itchy, though. Half the stuff, that's a problem with the internet, half the stuff you see out there isn't real, so I'm not buying that either.
Solange has a new album coming out. She does?
Oh, I thought you just said she had a new album coming out.
She does. She does.
Oh, she does. When was her old album? I haven't purchased any of the Solange catalog.
She's pretty talented. Actually.
She's a better natural singer than Beyonce. Yeah. She's just not a bigger star.
That's got to suck, like being in the shadow of Beyonce. She's like the Owen Hart to Beyonce's Brett. Or the Eli to Beyonce's Peyton.
Well, no,
Eli's got more titles than Peyton, so I'm not sure if that's
She's a Peyton to Eli.
I don't know. Like, that's a good question. Would you rather be Peyton Manning or Eli Manning?
What about Cooper? Well, this is Carl Cooper.
She's Cooper. Yeah. Cooper was probably more talented than... That's the rumor. More talented, both Peyton and Eli, who just wasn't a superstar. So, yeah, she's Cooper Manny.
She got hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, got hurt.
And she got pregnant, so there you go.
Yeah. Hurt, pregnant, same difference. Pop the Molly, I'm sweating. Woo! Speaking of which, last story of the day in segment four is, it's not a cracky tale per se, but it does have to do with drugs, Marcus.
Yeah, Richard Caldwell, former NFL receiver, was arrested after signing a United States Postal Service package that contained almost 5 pounds of Molly. He was set up, man.
Oh, man.
Street value of over 60 grand.
Yes. That's a lot of Molly. Like, who is he hanging with? Justin Bieber?
You might be dealing for Justin Bieber. Who knows?
Oh, man, this is it's not a good look. I mean, it's never a good look to get busted with copious amounts of narcotics. But, you know, Rashay Caldwell, he's a grown-ass man, 35, hadn't played in the league since 2007. You know,
speaking of Rihanna, she's at the Clipper game, and she's sporting, like, a pink haircut.
Rihanna's at the Clipper.
Beyonce wouldn't show up with a pink haircut.
I turned the channel too late. Like, Billy Chris is on now.
Yeah. Alfred signed off. See, maybe he saw Rihanna and had to handle something.
Oh, either that or he made a call to Rashay Caldwell. I hope not.
Yeah.
Don't do drugs, kids. Or Alfred. So, yeah, I guess that's going to do it for this week's show. This feels like Outkast when Killer Mike came out and they couldn't perform the last song.
So that, does that mean John Pollock is the City of Indio?
Yeah, John Pollock. He's Mr. Coachella.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, guys.
There's Alfred.
You're back.
No, we didn't cut short.
You're back just in time to sign off.
Yeah.
Okay. But welcome back. That is all the time we have.
I did mention Rihanna's at the Clipper game wearing she's sporting a new pink haircut. Her hair is all pink now.
Oh, wow.
I can't tell if it's a wig or not, but her hair is pretty short, so it might be she just dyed it and is doing something spontaneous.
Didn't Nicki Minaj have pink hair for a while?
Yeah, but that was a wig.
Oh.
This is really short. I don't know if it's a wig or not, but it's very short.
Yeah. She's just doing that to troll other high school kids who are going to do it.
Yep.
Who are going to do it. She's going to mock them. She's trying to bait her for next time. Rihanna, not a nice person. So that's going to do it for this week. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Don't pop Molly. Don't sell Molly. But Big Nasty, where can people check you out and send you well wishes about the return of your vehicle?
Well, follow me on This Is Nasty. I go to Bleacher Report, read my articles. There's a reason WWE has planned to rip off WWE WTF because it's that awesome. So watch the show, watch my review, and just tell me how much you feel bad for me for losing my car because it really was a traumatizing experience, and I could use your support.
Marcus Vandenberg.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MarcoWill, MarcoWill, where you could see photos of my new vehicle as of this weekend because my current vehicle I am trading in. It's had some issues. So,
you trading in the new whip?
Don't buy the Mercedes 2014 CLA 250, people. Don't do it. It's the first model, and I've had a number of rattles in the inside, and a lot of stuff's been replaced, including like the glove box and the command center. But the bigger issues that I'm reading online is that the cars are like crapping out on the freeway, so people are driving 60, and the car will just shut off, leaving people to like scramble and get to the side. So there's some serious issues going on, and it's time to. I thought this would be my dream car, but I'm going to settle for a used Mercedes instead. So.
Yeah, that's why you never buy the first of anything.
I know. Lesson learned. Lesson learned.
Listen to our first world problems, though.
I know. Trade in my Mercedes for another one.
I gotta ride around this Mercedes.
I'm sorry, America.
Somebody in a third world country who had to cross a stream to listen to this.
We do have listeners in Africa, so yeah, I apologize.
These niggas are talking about Mercedes. We do not have food.
If you are one of those listeners who is riding around in a cart, please email us, thekingsofsport@gmail.com.
You can follow me on Twitter, N8MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Check out my semi-weekly musings and send me some support, send me some love. Still waiting to hear back from Mad Dog Chris Russo and his people up in New York. So they've received my information, so we'll see. You can check out all of us at CosPod, KOS_POD on Twitter. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, subscribe, rate, and review. Share the show with your friends. And check us out at placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the latest in sports and pop culture. And I think that's going to do it for this week. Marcus has to go car shopping. I've got to do a podcast with John Pollock. And Alfred has got to make a call to Rashay Caldwell.
MDMA. I got to get on to that.
Got you feeling like a champion. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, I am the Godfather Nate Milton.
Don't steal cars.
And you've been down with the King.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks. is attacked like I just left.